There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Any Stupid Questions. The political podcast that wants to ask stupid questions about big issues. Questions like, what the fuck is wrong with Boris Johnson? Joining me today to discuss universities is John Morgan, news editor of Times Higher Education, and with him, comedians Tom Neenan and Gráinne Maguire. John, I'm going to start. I have a question for you, and my question is this. Why does anybody bother going to university when it costs £9,500 a year?
Well, the first answer would be that there are huge benefits to individuals in terms of their earnings. There was a study in 2013 tried to estimate lifetime earnings for graduates compared with people who just got two A-levels and didn't go on to university. The figures they came up with were £252,000 extra in earnings for women and £168,000 extra for men from being a graduate.
So you're saying there's no wage gap? No, you're not saying that.
actually, it's a bigger earnings premium for women, but you don't just have to look at the earnings benefits. There's a lot of research showing that there are big social benefits from being a graduate. If you're a graduate, you're more likely to have higher levels of health, less likely to commit crimes. Your children are likely to have higher standards of health, likely to have higher standards of educational attainment. So there are a huge range of benefits from higher education, and actually the social benefits are arguably just as important as the financial benefits in terms of earnings.
What level of tuition fee would it be before that stops being the case? How far can the government push tuition fees? £20,000 a year? £30,000 a year?
Well, this year, the tuition fee is £9,250.
Yes, because they've capped it, haven't they?
Exactly. The government has said it's not going to push it any further. That's going to be capped, whereas the previous plan had been to raise that in line with inflation. So what the government's reacting to there is the perceived popularity of Jeremy Corbyn with younger voters at the election. Labour had a policy to scrap tuition fees and reintroduce student maintenance grants. Mm-hmm. And then Theresa May has also said that there's going to be a major review of university funding and student finance. So there could be a lot more changes coming down the track as well.
Because I assume we all went to university. Did you go to university, Tom?
Yeah, I went to the University of Life. Okay. And Durham. And I was wondering, do universities breed a bunch of people who need to toughen up? They get to sit around, they get everything looked after, and they get these safe spaces. And should we not be encouraging people to just get out there and work? It's a cruel world out there.
Toughen up in what sense exactly?
Just toughen up. Because what happens is people graduate and they go into a job market that doesn't exist, and then they start crying and whining and blogging about it. So,
what? Your series is on the radio?
Oh yeah, I don't have a leg to stand on. Shouldn't people just fresh out of school get out in the job market, because it's going to be tougher after 3 years and they've got the debt? They should just get working, surely.
Well, it does sound quite tough having to take on borrowing to fund your own studies. You've got the pressure of finding a job in what is really tough job market at the end of it. That's pretty tough. That's quite a tough introduction to life. And what kind of jobs are on offer for people who don't go to university? If you wanted less people to go to university, I think you'd have to create a much stronger system of vocational technical education. So you'd need a better alternative to university, for one thing. And it would also be about a different kind of economy. You're probably talking about something a bit more like Germany, where people go into apprenticeships and work in kind of small and medium-sized manufacturers. Well, if we want something like that, then we need an economy more like Germany. We need to have, you know, more high-end manufacturing. We need to have the kind of vocational system of education that those manufacturers then feed off. I would say you can't really change the university system in isolation. It's about the economy around it as well.
Yeah, they should have won the Second World War, is what you're saying. That's fine.
But if you think about, like, so university, that prepares you for life because you survive Freshers Week.
Mm-hmm.
You've got traffic light bulbs. You've survived phone parties.
True.
You learn how to lie about mental illness, so you get your extension for your essay. These are all valuable skills that you'll need in the job market.
That is true.
But have you got any questions, Grania?
I do, because I've read different reports saying that actually there's more people from sort of like poor working class families actually going to university now since fees have gone up. Is that true?
That is correct. The proportion of disadvantaged students is at record levels. A few reasons why that might be. One might be the state of the labour market. Obviously, we're still struggling with the legacy of the financial crisis, and Britain was hit really hard by that. So people might be making a judgment, thinking, what chances do I have of getting a decent, well-paid job if I don't go to university? And the other thing might be that people have understood the student loan system quite well. So you don't have to pay back what you've borrowed until you graduate. And until you earn £21,000, you won't start repaying. Actually, that's going up to £25,000, that threshold in 2018, another change the government's made. And you repay your loan at 9% of your earning, of your monthly earnings above that threshold. And anything you haven't repaid after 30 years gets written off. So people have understood that if you go on to be a low earner, you're not going to have to repay the loan at all, or not repay it in full. The vast majority of people won't repay it in full. So a lot of people think, actually, we shouldn't be calling it a debt and loans, because that's risks deterring people. Psychologically, debt is a damaging idea. And the university's minister, Jo Johnson, is one of those people. He recently said we should not be talking about debt and loans. We should be calling it a time-limited income-linked graduate contribution.
Which it sounds catchier.
It's possibly not snappy enough to catch on more widely, but you can see the argument he's trying to make. And yeah, so that might be one of the reasons that people have understood how the system works.
Tom and Grania, can I ask you where you lived in your first year at university?
I went to university in Dublin. So I lived in Drumcondra for a little bit, and then I lived in Ranelagh for a little bit.
Did you live in halls?
Oh,
rather than, I mean, that's lovely.
No, I lived in a shared flat. I lived in a shared flat with other students.
And Tom, how about you, first year?
Yes, so at Durham, I went to a college called Grey, and there's a building called Oswald Building, and that's particularly about the building is called Oswald West, where the underlay of the carpet had rotted, but they couldn't get it out, so the whole thing had a particular smell, and you can just tell anyone who went to that particular building because they all smelled the same.
Oh, that's amazing. Because for me, a big issue that would put me off going to university is luxury student accommodation. How has that been allowed to happen? How have we got into a situation where you can still be going to study art and design at Hull? I don't know if they do that. Really sorry if you're at Hull and they don't do that degree. And you're being forced to pay £125 a week for luxury student accommodation. Like, no 18-year-old needs their own toilet.
No.
It's not a thing.
You're absolutely right in that there's been a lot of research showing that students' living costs are actually the key issue, rather than the headline fee cost. It's the amount of money they have to actually live on while they're at university. So maintenance grants have recently been abolished. That was a George Osborne move to save money and make the deficit look better. So now, whereas the poorest students previously would have been able to get a grant, now they just have to take out a loan up to a maximum of about £8,000. But that tapers off according to your household income, so that's quite a small number of proportion of people get that. There have been suggestions that another of the moves the government's going to make, as it gets rather panicked about the impact that Jeremy Corbyn's had with the free tuition policy, mm-hmm. the policy to bring back maintenance grants, maybe the government is going to bring back maintenance grants quite quickly, which would be a very swift reversal of the George Osborne decision.
That's not enough to make young people vote Conservative, though, right? I mean,
it would have to be part of a batch.
A batch of left-wing principles.
It would have to be part of a bigger you know, plan for reforms to university finance.
Surely our economy will be better if more people, you know, third level degrees and educated. So is it just real short-termism that they're not looking after student rent and stuff like that? Surely they should be like, yeah, we want loads of people to go to university. For political reasons, that will be for a better policy.
I think the government would, up until the post-election Corbyn panic among elements of the Conservative Party, actually the university's minister, Jo Johnson, was saying that the system's performed extremely well and the number of disadvantaged students has continued to rise. Overall student numbers have continued to rise. So actually they hadn't been deterred because of the way the loan system was constructed. But scrapping of the maintenance grants is seen as a potentially transformative change that could completely disrupt that. We don't know. We'll have to see how that feeds through. But definitely the government does want, you know, more people to go to university. The government abolished the cap on student numbers in 2015, so whereas previously each university was told how many students it could recruit as a maximum, and there was a maximum number overall, that's all gone. So in theory, there's no limit to the amount of students who can enter higher education. It's, you know, just dependent on their willingness to do so and the willingness of the universities to recruit them. So yeah, the government's view is that it wants more people to go to university and sees that as an economic asset.
Is it an ideological broadening the minds, making people smarter in the way that Tony Blair sold it with his 50%? He wanted 50% of people to go to university because it would make us, you know, culturally and knowledgeably richer. Or is it more to do with everybody? I mean, not everybody can have a high income job.
I would say that up until now, when we've seen mainly the government talking about wanting to get more people to go to university, that could now change. Now we've got this major review coming.
Yeah.
Up until now, I'd say the major driver for why this government wanted more people to go to university was because of the economic consequences. It's a human capital theory position that more people in getting skills, that leads to increased productivity if you have more graduates. I'd say there's been too much emphasis on that side, possibly. It's a bit one-sided. That's just kind of a supply measure. Get loads of graduates coming through, expect to get economic growth from it. But there's also the side where government industrial strategy matters in terms of creating the skilled jobs that people would do once they're graduates. Investment in infrastructure also creates jobs, you know, helping grow the economy in the regions. What kind of graduate jobs are people going to get in the northeast without building up the infrastructure and investing in the northeast and bringing back companies and jobs to areas like that? So there's probably needs to be balanced out with other measures rather than just expecting that expansion of graduate numbers is automatically going to lead to good things for the economy.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hear a lot about, say, no platforming of people at universities, people who shouldn't be allowed to speak at universities and stuff like that. I'm kind of interested to know, do you think that should be encouraged, that there should be people who shouldn't be allowed to speak at universities, which are obviously places of learning, or do you think, you know, students should be allowed to hear whoever they want speak and make up their own minds?
The normal position is that if you're going to have a speaker whose views are controversial in some way, that you would offer an opportunity or have a panel that includes an alternative voice to that. So you're balancing things out in some way. That's the position that a lot of universities take and is kind of almost a standard. A lot of this kind of debate is coming from the US. So I think in this country we're starting to see more of a culture wars approach to universities, where they're often portrayed as somehow bastions of liberal ideas that are intolerant of right of centre or conservative.
Not Loughborough.
Do you think it's a result of, because students sort of see themselves as consumers rather than students, because they pay so much for fees, they're like, they feel more entitled to be, you know, like, oh, I don't want to hear this, or rather than sort of more sort of humility, like, I'm here to learn.
That could be a factor. There's certainly been a shift to students seeing themselves as more as consumers. Now they obviously have to pay more money for their education, and there's surveys showing that student satisfaction with the value for money they get is going down, obviously, as they have to pay more money. Connection with kind of campus free speech issues, possibly.
I taught a comedy writing course as part of a university degree, and the students were such little brats. They expected comedy writing to be fun. They genuinely thought this was going to be a blow-off class, and I arrived in being like, 10 jokes about the colour blue. You've got, you know, go for it. You've got 2 minutes. And they're like, I thought we could just watch YouTube clips.
Do you think there are some courses that don't offer good value for money? I mean, how come rubbish universities with rubbish courses can still charge $9,250 a year?
Can you sat right there, by the way.
I'd probably take a bit of issue with the phrase rubbish universities,
yes.
But usefully there is a huge amount of new data that's just been published addressing that very point. In the summer, the government published the first batch of this data called Longitudinal Education Outcomes, or LEO. It's more exciting.
Is it a good read?
It's more exciting than it sounds, and it's very important. So basically this is looking at people's tax returns and records on where and what they studied on an anonymised basis, and you put it all together and produce a big data project that tells you the average graduate earnings for each course at each university, and what they're looking at is people's median earnings 5 years after graduation.
Yeah.
So that produces some interesting figures, and I can tell you about some of the figures.
All right, Corbyn. That's quite a data reference.
It's kind of grouped into subject areas, and the course with the best median earnings 5 years after graduation, it's in the Business Administrative Studies group, £71,700. Do you know which university that might be at?
Loughborough.
Really take your
guess
kick
again.
Plymouth.
Guess again.
Kiel.
No.
Is it one of the London ones?
No, I'm going to put you out of your misery.
What is it?
It's Oxford.
Oh, that seemed too obvious. Those nerds.
Well, it is pretty obvious data in some ways. Next is Law, the university with the highest earnings on that, £61,400. Can you guess that?
Hang on, is this their average earning after 5 years?
Yeah.
Fucking hell, I did the wrong course. That is that... I don't know where you go to study law. Is that Oxford as well?
You're getting very good at this. Yes, yeah. Yes. I'll do one more. Next is economics at this particular university. 61,000, 5 years after graduation.
Is it Oxford again?
Is it Cambridge?
Ooh, yes.
Oh, well done. So they are good universities. Then.
Is there an index on which university produces the coolest students?
That there is no data on that.
It's University College Dublin. I think
there has been some kind of look at which universities have the most cachet and creative subjects, etc., which kind of equated to coolness, but. In terms of the graduate earnings, data shows a very clear link between the A-level grades or other kinds of grades that people get, and that closely links to their social background. So what this is really telling us is that the people who get the highest graduate earnings come from affluent backgrounds and go to the most selective universities.
Yeah.
So it's not that surprising, but it's really important data, this, because there's been a lot of briefings from the government to the newspapers at the time this major review of university funding was announced. Some people in government clearly want to use are suggesting that these graduate earnings figures should be used to set the fee caps for universities. So some people in government are worried that all universities charge the maximum. I think that's a problem. There's no so-called price competition, so they want to force down the fee cap at universities that are perceived to be doing less well on their graduate earnings. But as we can see, these graduate earnings figures are really very closely linked. They're telling you about social background of university students and also where the university is located, which region is a really crucial factor in the kind of level of earnings its graduates go on to get, because obviously a university in the northeast that keeps a lot of its graduates in the northeast will have lower earnings than a university that sends all its graduates to London.
And is this surely a table like this is going to put people off doing arts degrees as well? So I studied philosophy and I loved my degree and I'm really glad I got to do it, but if I was picking a course now, I don't think I would choose to do such a valueless no, I loved it. I really love my degree, but it's not had any impact on my future earnings. I could have done a degree in golf and I could still in fact I probably would have had more Edinburgh shows. Is this basically the death of the arts and humanities?
That would certainly be a worry that people who are concerned about this data would express. And if you look at the data, then if I look at the course that comes out with the lowest earnings 5 years after graduation, it is Creative Arts and Design. Conservatoire for Dance and Drama, it's £10,000. But there's a big problem with how the data sort of looks at the creative subjects, because it doesn't include earnings data from people who are self-employed. So a lot of people in the creative arts.
Cash in hand.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I think I would have dragged those stats down.
but you're right, what the government is hoping to use this data is to sort of nudge students towards the subjects that have higher earnings in the hope that they will earn more money, pay higher taxes, contribute to the economy. But there would be a concern about possibly students being directed away from courses in the arts and humanities as well.
But do you not think that students who are attracted to like the creative arts and writing, you need to figure in the deluded factor, because they'll be the ones going, yeah, but in 2 years time I'll probably be in Hollywood, so it's not gonna it's gonna impact me.
Yeah, that's not in your data. To move it back onto the fees and the loan system just for one moment. So the loans are owned by a private company. There's a loan book that has been sold to a company, yes?
No, it's a government-backed loan provided by the Student Loans Company.
And the Student Loans Company is...
If people can't be traced for some reason, then, yeah, the Student Loans Company can hire sort of debt enforcement.
But the Student Loans Company is government-owned?
It's government-backed, yeah.
What kind of debt enforcement are they hiring?
There's been a bit of concern about people who fail to keep their contact details up to date, and the Student Loans Company finds it, can't trace them, and then passes their details on to...
Are my legs going to get broken?
Do you have to make sure you keep your contact details?
How easy is it to spend your entire life doing degrees and then faking your own death? Is that a thing that... I'd love to go and do another degree. I'd love to like do an MA or something, but it's so expensive. I guess one of the arguments is when you're 18 and you're looking at this idea of debt, it's sort of, you can kind of say, well, it's just going to be a tax on my earnings and when I earn more money. But if you wanted to go to university at 40, it's putting off mature students, isn't it?
There is a big problem in the system with how mature students have reacted, and the fact that student numbers for part-time students, a lot of whom will be mature students who have jobs and want to study part-time, they've absolutely gone off a cliff under the new system. And David Willetts, who was universities minister when this was introduced, has said that that's his biggest regret over the system, the fact that part-time student numbers have gone down so badly. It is a bit of a crisis in part-time, that if there is going to be a major review of university funding, as the Prime Minister says, then that is really something that needs to be looked at.
How about if fees go down the older you are? So if you don't do a degree till you're 50, you only have to pay £50.
It's a good idea. I guess you might get what's called perverse incentives with a kind of huge numbers of 50 plus year olds wanting to study, but
you don't want them at the traffic light ball though, do you?
No.
Mature students don't need to go to university anymore. We've got TED Talks. There's no need for anybody to do a mature student to do a degree or an MA ever again, because there'll be a TED Talk on it or a podcast. Podcasts on everything.
There are podcasts on everything. So we've got time for one more question each. Tom, do you have one?
Can anyone set up a university in the same way that anyone can become president of the United States?
In the future, that would appear more likely, because the government introduced a new act earlier this year that makes it easier to set up new higher education institutions.
Should we go in together? Yeah.
Whereas previously they would have had, if you wanted to start up a new institution, you would have had to get sort of a validation agreement with the university where they would have been sort of, you'd had to offer the university's degrees and they would have been keeping check on you. Now, from the get-go, you'll be able to award your own degrees on a probationary basis. So if you fancy it.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
Grania?
My question is kind of two-part. Who was in charge of deciding that degrees were 3 years? Like, it seems like an arbitrary amount of years. And why don't people wear cloaks and mortar boards anymore? Could they make a comeback?
On the first question, that's sort of down to the educational culture in different countries. So in the US, four-year degrees are much more the standard, and you have...
So they have more ad breaks.
And there's kind of a broader education where you don't specialise in your degree at such an early stage, so you have a broader first year. It's more of an all-round education. In this country, obviously, they prefer the specialised aspect, so it's a three-year system. So it's kind of down to sort of national cultures around education. On mortar boards and gowns, people do wear them.
Do they?
Yeah, they wear them at graduations, at Oxford and Cambridge in particular. Some examinations, you have to wear a gown.
But like just wandering around, going to your lectures?
It's probably quite unusual. So any particular reasons you'd like to see them make a comeback?
I like the drama of it. I think they should make a comeback.
My dad refused to get a graduation photo of me because he said the only time you ever see graduation photos is on the news when someone's been kidnapped. So never got to wear a mortarboard.
I've actually told... I look so disgusting in my graduation photo that I've told my parents that's one they cannot use should I get murdered. Absolutely. So my final question is... What course would you absolutely not allow your children to take? Come on, you must know which one that is.
Well, I've talked up the social benefits of higher education, so I'd be a bit hypocritical if I was saying, you know, there's one course that you shouldn't choose, because I'm sure, you know...
Hotel management.
Individual benefits in terms of improved health and lower likelihood of committing crime and... All kinds of social benefits for the economy, but I told you the course that had the lowest graduate
you
earnings.
Did.
So if that's the kind of data you want to look at and make your decisions on, that the government has provided that for you now.
But you wouldn't ever say, "Oh, darling, please don't do that course."
Well, I did English, so maybe I'd dissuade my children from taking English.
See, I think it's a real shame that we're losing people studying wonderful things.
But they're the nerds. If they're not willing to spend $9,000 a year so they can read Beowulf in the original Middle English, screw them. More for us.
Well, I think that just about covers it. Thank you very much, John Morgan. Any Stupid Questions was hosted by me, Danielle Ward. My guests were Grania Maguire, Tom Neenan, and John Morgan from the Times Higher Education magazine. It was recorded at the Phoenix in Cavendish Square and produced by Ed Morrish for the internet. If you enjoyed our podcast, then subscribing, rating, and reviewing it will help other people find it. And you can also tell them about the show with your mouth.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.